Back together again, you and I wrapping up a busy week, Friday style, May 9th, 2025, on Connecticut Today, where I open the show by pointing out what I think is the arrogant disregard emanating from the state capitol on the continued issue of transgender athletes in Connecticut. We heard Family Institute of Connecticut Executive Director Peter Wolfgang and Connecticut Catholic Conference Executive Director Chris Healy both commenting on Pope Leo XIV's election. And former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso dropped by with his weekly update, including a lot on school funding reform. Yesterday, regarding the election of an American Pope, the first ever American Pope, Pope Leo XIV, turns out there was another example at the state capitol as to why majority Democrats in this state and Democrats in general, as much as Chris Murphy says, hey, we've got to amend some of our social issue stances, as much as his buddy Brian Schatz is out there, senator from Hawaii, saying, hey, we have to be a Big Ten. The Democratic Party in Connecticut yesterday, during the discussion about the election of Pope Leo, kind of another event that was going on, the party showed again that their heads are in the sand on at least one big issue that may not affect a lot of people, but it was shown to have been very effective during the White House campaign, the one we just got out of in November of 2024. Yes, I know some of you are going to roll your eyes again when I mention it, but you know what? It ain't going away. And in fact, not only is it not going away, the Democratic Party is parking its heads so far up its nether regions, those are reaching new heights. Yes, it's about biological males being allowed to, and in sometimes encouraged, to play sports set aside by law for women and girls in Connecticut. What am I talking about? Big story on this, Alex Putterman's story, Hearst Connecticut Media, Connecticut Post, and all the Hearst newspapers. Now follow along here, because a key Democrat speaks here. I'm going to tell you what he said, and it just proves that not only is the Democratic Party out of it, I mean, they just don't get it on this, even though poll numbers are telling them, hey, you got to get it on this. At least in Connecticut, they don't get it. And it's mind-numbing that they don't. I don't know what they're afraid of, but this on a national basis is costing elections. And when any of them bitch and moan and whine and complain about this, saying, oh, my God, it wasn't fair, doesn't matter whether the use of the issue was fair or not, it works. Advocates and Republican lawmakers criticized Connecticut lawmakers Thursday for maintaining an inclusive stance toward transgender athletes. Connecticut state policy allows all athletes to compete according to the gender they identify with, and this is a cop-out. State officials don't want to do what they've actually done in other states, some red states too, and say, well, okay, we'll let biological young men and boys compete against women, but there has to be some hormone treatment. You have to undergo that for a few years. Connecticut doesn't. They hide behind, you know, the civil rights statutes in the state. The General Assembly doesn't want to make the tough decisions on this. They don't want to have the gouliones, if you'll excuse the expression, to stand up for women. They just don't. Even though survey after survey of their members of their own party don't like the policy. So Chris Murphy and Bernie Sanders and AOC, they can go on and out and worry about the oligarchs this and the billionaires and the banksters. Here is a basic issue that 68% of your own party is telling you, we do not agree with you on this, and you may want to change this, because this played a big part again in getting Donald Trump elected. But yesterday you had at least one senior Democratic official, I'll tell you who that is momentarily, come out and basically say, and I'll read you exactly what he said, but he basically said, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Now, he didn't exactly use those terms. I'll give you what he said momentarily. Well, the big deal, sir, is that your party got hammered on this in other parts of the country once you get out of safe blue areas. Don't take it from me. The Republican the Republican campaign did a self-analysis of what helped them reelect Donald Trump. And you know what? It was the commercials regarding who do you stand with, them or them, regarding transgender athletes. What did this, in fact, you're probably asking, who is this high-ranking Democrat, Paul, you speak of? And what did he say? I'll tell you momentarily, but I will let you know what today's question of the day is to start us. And by the way, you can go to facebook.com/voiceofct, facebook.com/voiceofct. Pretty simple question here. Should transgender athletes be allowed to compete against biological females in Connecticut interscholastic sports? Now, you may say, why am I talking about this again? Well, again, yesterday, a top Democrat pretty much blew off in a way, shape, or form, pretty much blew off the concerns of every biological female athlete in this state. What did he say? Tell you about that momentarily when we continue right here on WICC. So if you are among the folks in the state who say, hey, we understand some kids have mental issues they're dealing with, but I don't think it's fair that biological young women, especially in high school, have to compete against biological boys or men. If that's how you feel, the Speaker of the House of Connecticut just blew you off. House Speaker Matt Ritter, he was commenting yesterday after the Republicans gathered with some other advocates and said, hey, the state has got to pass something or go along with what the White House is saying, saying biological young men or biological boys should not be competing with biological girls or teens in high school or scholastic sports because it's unfair. Now, most of us with common sense would think that. But House Speaker Matt Ritter said this. Now, I want you to hear. Now, you may be on the fence about this issue, whatever. It doesn't matter. Have strong feelings either way. That's not the issue. The issue is how the elected Democratic majority of this state, at the drop of a hat, can tell somebody to go blank off. And they don't care. Because they live in this bubble in Connecticut, and they don't understand that this is an issue that is killing their party nationwide. If you don't believe me, look at the New York Times survey. 68% of Democrats said no, they don't want biological young men competing against women. 68% of Democrats. But you have people like House Speaker Matt Ritter in Hartford with their heads firmly parked in the sand. Listen to what Matt Ritter said yesterday. He was asked by Hearst to comment on this. At a news conference on Thursday morning, Speaker of the House Matt Ritter, a Hartford Democrat, described the issue as thorny, but ultimately defended Connecticut's policy allowing transgender girls to play girls' school sports, noting that it only applied to a few students in the state. Okay. So that's the argument you always get from Democrats. Well, it's only a few students, whatever. Now, they never are able to answer the question, well, wait a minute, what if these few students are winning competitions as what happened back in 2018 and 2019 here in Connecticut to some girls' high school track athletes in the Hartford area to trigger the national confrontation on this? Now, they never answer that. Oh, but it gets worse. Here's what Matt Ritter said, quote, if you look at these statistics about these individual children and the thing they go through, whether it be bullying, mental health issues, if playing sports is a relief and gives him or her greater joy, I don't think anyone is penalized by that. Now, that's the end of that statement. Arrogance, number one. There's the first part of the arrogance. Well, wait a minute, Speaker Ritter. Sir, with all due respect, and I don't know, I have no idea what Matt Ritter's family situation is. I don't know. But I would ask him this. If your daughter or stepdaughter or niece or granddaughter, whatever, he's not that old enough, I think, to have grandkids. But you know what I'm asking? If that person was to be defeated by a biological male, you still okay with that? Would he still be saying, I don't think anyone is penalized by that? Jesus H, can you be any more arrogant? Holy key rap. As my late Uncle Louie used to say, No, but Matt Ritter wasn't done. And again, folks, this is from the State House Speaker of Connecticut. This is not some backwater backbencher here. This gentleman is, if it goes, is the same as the federal succession goes. He's the number three person in Connecticut government behind the governor and the lieutenant governor. Oh, but he continued. He continued the same. Now, get this. Listen to this arrogance. You thought the first sentence was arrogant. Wait till you hear this. The same people who are so strident in their views that it's the worst thing that's ever happened and all common sense is gone, I would hope they remember we do have some kids really, really struggling. Jeez, Mr. Speaker, can you be? But see, this is why they don't get it. They don't get it. Oh, I can't. And I talk to people on this show all the time, and people call me and say, well, it's only a few kids. Yes. Even if it's 5, 15, or 1,500 across the nation, that doesn't make a difference because you are indicating your thinking by how you answer this question. Again, I will read the sentence, and again, keep in mind, this is from the number three person in the Connecticut sitting government right now. Matt Ritter says, the same people who are so strident in their views that it's the worst thing that's ever happened and all common sense is gone, I would hope they'd remember we do have some kids really, really struggling. Really? Okay, Speaker Ritter, I get it. I understand it. These kids have a lot on their plate. They're struggling. Nobody's arguing that. But here's how I would counter that. Because these kids are struggling, and I'm not discounting that at all, should they be given the opportunity and the chance, which has proven out previously, to maybe unfairly win competitions that were designed for biological girls? The bigger question here, why don't any Democrats in Hartford defend biological women and girls? Now, when it comes to abortion, hey, line up. All you people who want abortions, go over there. That's fine. Go ahead. But when it comes to anything to do with defending the rights of female athletes to compete only against females, where are you? Where are the women's groups? Where's this women's caucus in Hartford and that women's caucus and the other one's caucus and the she caucus and the her caucus and love us all caucus? Oh, but they're like freaking crickets. That's all you get on a warm summer's night. You know, you women, seriously, that vote Democratic, can you have any more of a prime example here that a lot of the people that you vote for, oh, we're the party of women, we represent women. Really? You do? So if you women out there right now are listening to me and you have a granddaughter or a daughter or a stepdaughter and they're in high school or some sort of interscholastic level of track and field or soccer or softball or field hockey or swimming, and they're defeated by a biological male, the leadership of this state and the leadership of the CIAC, they don't give a rat's arse. They don't. And a bunch of you still sit around and say, my God, how did Trump win? My God, he's so awful. My God, Mary, how do you think he won? I can't figure it out. Simple question, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Should transgender athletes be allowed to compete against biological females in Connecticut interscholastic sports? It ain't hard, but if you're like me and you say no, oh, according to some high-ranking Democrats in Hartford, we're the problem, not them. Hey, Peter Wolfgang joins us right now, the executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut, the state's, I would say, major Catholic family organization here. to talk about the election, the elevation of Pope Leo the 14th. Peter, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul, it's great. Thanks for having me back on.
So did you pick yourself off the floor like I did when I looked up at the monitor here and on the wire I saw American Pope? I was like, are you kidding me? Right?
Paul, in my lifetime, I never expected to see a Pope from the United States of America.
Yeah.
We are the most powerful country in the world, and I always figured that the rest of the, you know, much of the rest of the world was either fearful, if not envious at times. And the idea of like someone from our country having the greatest spiritual position in the entire world, I just didn't think that would ever happen. But it did. And here we are now with Pope Leo the 14th of Chicago.
Yeah. And not just America, from Middle America. And Peter, immediately the wheels started turning in my head like, all right, American Pope, why? I came up with two things. One, you know, church attendance isn't the greatest, especially among men here in the country. But two, and I was proven right, I thought, when I saw some of his social media postings, again, not a real fan here of the Trump White House from what we've been seeing, right?
Yeah, he's definitely, I would put him more on the left wing of the Catholic Church than the right wing. But I think we need to drill down on that, because it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing, those labels in Catholicism, that they do in American politics. There's some overlap, but there's also some crucial differences. So, okay. This is the first pope in history to have a Twitter history that we can all go back through and sort of nitpick. I don't know. You know, I think of it a little bit like a good analogy might be Prince Charles.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
He was out there in the public eye for decades, oftentimes in ways that were not flattering.
Mm.
But when he became King Charles, I think he would have been the first to say, look, it's a different position now, and I'm going to be saying things differently. And I think you could expect the same thing from Pope Leo. I would even suggest that was part of the attraction to the College of Cardinals, that what they were looking for after 12 years of Pope Francis was a guy who, you know, key issues for myself as an American conservative, right?
Yeah.
Think of gun control or climate change,
sure,
or migration. I'm guessing that Pope Leo is going to be on the opposite end of me based on that Twitter history. But where I think you're going to have a difference is in the tone. I think what the bishops were looking for was some continuity with the Francis pontificate, but maybe turning down the volume a little bit, because the thing about Francis, and I know that the world's media liked him, but he had a tendency to be very, very rough with those elements inside the Catholic Church that he didn't care for. He once referred to EWTN, which is the global Catholic cable channel here in the USA.
Yeah.
He once referred to EWTN as the work of the devil.
Holy Father, don't hold back whatever you
right. Well, he frequently referred to Latin Mass people as backward or rigid. He once said that Catholics shouldn't breed like rabbits. And, you know, there's a lot of Catholics out there that grew up under Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict and were encouraged to have big families. And then you have the next pope after those two. They often felt like the pope himself was giving them a good kick in the teeth.
Yeah.
So my sense is that is not the sort of man Pope Leo is. I think you're going to see sort of a broad continuity with the themes of the Francis pontificate.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe when this guy talks about the new pope, when he talks about building a bridge, I think maybe you're going to see the volume is going to be turned down, the tone's going to be changed, and maybe a bridge between the progressive and the conservative wings of the church. You know, John Paul II and Benedict were very much thought to be conservative popes.
Yeah.
Francis was very obviously a liberal pope. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a pope for both? And I think Leo might be that guy.
Interesting. And on that, we'll wrap it up. Hey, Peter, thank you, folks. Go online, the Family Institute of Connecticut. Check it out. And the great Peter Wolfgang, always valuing his perspective. Peter, thank you. Have a happy weekend. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, appreciate it. There you go. All right. And let's put a capper on our coverage of local Catholic voices here regarding the election of a gentleman from Chicago, a cardinal who is now Pope Leo XIV. Chris Healy joins us. Chris, of course, the executive director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. Chris, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great to be with you.
Did you have to pick yourself up off the floor the way I almost did when I looked up at the screen and I saw American Cardinal elected Pope? What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, I was part of that crowd up in Hartford. We all had our computers on, yeah. And when they started to read his name, the name kind of sounded familiar, and I said, that sounds like an American. And, yeah. You know, there's this moment that's just like delayed, just, you know, until you actually, it really makes, you know, it becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, you know, when the Rangers win the Stanley Cup once yeah. every 55 years, you don't really believe it.
Don't get me going.
You see it. But no, it's obviously it's a joyous day in for Catholics around the world mm-hmm. and for people of faith that who also rejoiced in this selection of a very, you know, all of the people that serve at the College Council are impressive people. And Pope Leo certainly has mm-hmm. the life experience of a parish priest, of a missionary, of yeah. a head of an organization of great Catholic thought and timeless qualities, worked inside the Vatican, knows every bishop in the world.
Yeah.
Probably, and so, but also his manner, his command of language, his sincerity, humility, all this is obviously a great thing for us to rejoice in and support him and you know, take our faith forward as we evangelize the message of Jesus Christ. And I think that he made that very clear in his comments, as well mm-hmm. as, you know, just the kind of language he uses to make people feel that they belong and they're welcome and they're included. And I think that's what it's all about. And he certainly, to have an American do it in our lifetime as well, you know, for 500 years, they were of Italian descent.
Yeah.
And then they've nominated a Pole, a German, an Argentinian, and now an American. So,
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
You know, it's an exciting time.
Yeah. And in talking a few minutes ago to our friend Peter Wolfgang and a couple of days ago to an expert from Sacred Heart down the street here, Chris, they both had the notion of, okay, you had Pope Francis, who may have been considered a little progressive. That came off of Pope Benedict, who was considered a bit more of a hardliner. So those folks all said, maybe we're in for a centrist now for a new generation. What about the angle of how that may play out? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if you read about his work in his career, Pope Leo has demonstrated that he clearly is acceptable to everyone and mm-hmm. has worked with everyone in the church. And I think his teachings are in the traditions of our church. I think he's also someone who talks about, so not a Catholic word, but it's used mostly, synodality, which
yeah.
is, you know, an ongoing dialogue with people of faith about their faith. But he is also the keeper of the sacred truths of our Savior. And so on that, he is, you know, unquestionably authentic and real. And I think he, you know, clearly understands this moment in history, which, you know, if you were one of the 155 people who were in that room,
yeah.
You know, it's something you really can't compare it to anything else. But the fact that it's an American, I think, is a great thing for American Catholics for obvious reasons. It may, I think, also demonstrate to the world the great characteristics of Americans, and he'll obviously blend that with his unquestioned fealty and loyalty and love of God. So
we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
But you know, the good news in America is Catholics. People are coming back to the church. People are becoming people of the faith, particularly younger men.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing growth. We're capturing many of the people that we lost during COVID. And so the spirit is very strong within our church and in our country. And you know, this is he's 69, but looks very hale and hearty,
yeah.
And we could be in for a very long renaissance of growth in our faith, and that's good for all faiths.
Yep.
I think the other thing I think people forget the irony is that, you know, our country was founded on religious freedom, and our country at first, you know, welcomed all faiths into this country. And now we have, you know, an American who is, you know, spawned from a country that allowed people to pursue their faith without discrimination or being locked up. It's a huge statement as well. I think that will, that's just my own personal opinion. I think that will help again in keeping religious persecution of Christians and other religions down and start to turn that around in many parts of the world where Christians are being massacred in some cases, certainly discriminated against, and he'll be a strong voice on to stop that.
We can only hope. Thank you, Chris Healy, Executive Director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. Chris, thanks, my friend. We'll talk down the road. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
All right. Chris Healy there, Executive Director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. Our buddy, our pal, former Bridgeport Democratic Rep, Chris Caruso, dropping by with his weekly update, which I think, Chris, I'm going to dub the UFA report or the Modon report. What do you think? How's that?
Good afternoon, Paul. Good to hear from you.
What's going on, Chris? I see you want to start off. Well, you know, an issue, Chris, that is still looms large, the school budget in Bridgeport.
Yep. No, you're right. And this week there were thousands of students from Bridgeport, Waterbury, I believe Norwalk, Hartford, that came to the Capitol to rally for passage of the bill. I think it's 1551, which will reform the educational cost system that's set up, a cost sharing, I should say, and to increase the funding, especially to communities like Bridgeport. You know, almost what's fascinating is almost all of the city school budgets are strained.
Yeah.
You know, New Haven, they're in some cases close to $30 million, just like Bridgeport. So Bridgeport isn't alone. Everyone's having that experience. And it's because the equal cost sharing just hasn't been reformed. There's been carve-outs, niches where you get money for a certain school district, but not the reform that's needed. And in schools, in cities, you've seen an increase of poverty, working families that needs that additional funding to hire staff, special education costs, all of those things that on a daily basis. It was interesting in Bridgeport. Apparently, they didn't have enough money to buy art supplies. And what one of the teachers did was she took papers and stapled them together so the kids could have their art book to do different assignments.
Oh.
That's what's going on. So, you know, under 1551, a city like Bridgeport would receive about $57 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the fiscal audit that, you know, the forensic audit that's being suggested by or will be happening by the State Board of Education for Bridgeport, we'll find out how money is spent, and we can direct the additional funding into areas that's needed. Social workers, teachers,
sure,
paraprofessionals, you know. So I'm proud of the students. They went up there. In some cases, they ran their own press conference. They didn't bring any politician to run it or adults. They actually ran their press conference, and from what I understand, did very well. And so it's critically important that people – call up and ask the legislature to reform the educational cost sharing with bill number 1551, I believe.
Chris, and before we get to our other topics, it's amazing to me, previous radio, one of my 43 radio jobs, I worked with a gentleman who was a full-time teacher after he did his morning stuff with us, and he would tell me, now this has to be 20 years ago, Chris, he's since retired.
Yeah.
He told me that on a yearly basis, I asked him once, how much of your own money do you drop on supplies and stuff a year? He paused for a minute and said, about $700. I'm like, are you kidding me? And Chris, this stuns me every time we have these funding problems and you have teachers who have to reach into their own pockets. Yep. How is this possible?
Well, it's just because of the lack of funding, and in particular for supplies, equipment.
Yeah.
And yet you look at some school districts, where they have top-of-the-line equipment, resources, and so forth. You know, in Bridgeport, the Board of Education is cutting 20 teachers. I think it's like 40 paraprofessionals.
Yeah.
That budget will be so depleted. And, you know, contrary to what people believe, teachers don't get paid a great deal of money. You know, they buy into a pension program mm-hmm. that goes, I think it's, what, 37 years?
Yeah.
And then they don't collect Social Security because they're in this pension program.
Yep.
They're not making top dollars. Some of the teachers from the cities go into the suburbs because the suburbs are paying, in some cases, $20,000
yeah.
more
yep.
than you get to work in the city. So the system is broken. It needs to be reformed. And if we want to see productivity, kids coming out of the system, able to take work on, able to go to college, we've got to invest. But it has to be wisely invested. That's critically important. Mm. And I think in Bridgeport, the forensic audit will show us where the money's going, how it's being spent, and then adjustments can be made so it's spent in the right areas.
Yep.
But overall, these systems are ready to collapse. And, you know, when they collapse, Paul, these kids don't get the sports program. They don't get the arts. You know, they're cutting out a
music
program.
Music, yeah. Yeah.
And music and the arts enrich a person's soul.
Yeah.
And especially young people. Like, they have a Bridgeport program called FAME, F-A-M-E,
yeah.
which is for kids with the arts,
sure.
performing arts. That's being cut out of the budget. So the yeah. more you do that stuff, you make the stress on students and teachers even increase. So I would, you know, anyone who believes in education and understands the necessity, call your local legislators, 1551.
Okay.
Get that bill passed because it will reform the system. You know, in the rally, I guess Governor Lamont came out with a program that he's increased funding to education during his time period. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. It has to be reformed. In cities, you've got to look at the population of poverty.
Yeah.
How many kids are low-income families, which could be. The number of languages spoken in Bridgeport, the last count I had was 78 different languages.
That's amazing.
Spoken.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we've got to adjust to those needs, or we're going to, frankly, the system's going to collapse, and that's yeah. going to have a ripple effect on quality of life in cities.
Yeah. You know, Chris, when you and I were growing up, there were people say there are two inevitabilities in life. I say there was a third, besides death and taxes, the yep. fact that we would never have an American pope. Well, how about that, huh? Did you have to pick yourself off the floor like I did? I looked up at the TV and go, what?
Well, you know, Paul, I'm going to be honest with you. He was on one of my short lists.
Was he really? Wow,
he
look
really
at you.
I had Tagle from the
yeah.
Philippines.
The Filipino guy, yeah.
I thought the Cardinals wanted maybe to expand yeah. the look of the church more for the Asian community.
Yeah.
I looked at Paolin,
yeah.
who is the Secretary of State, because, hey, he's kind of governing a lot of stuff. I thought he was good.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, and it was a long shot, but Cardinal Dolan from New York, very charismatic.
Yeah, charming. I thought, Chris, if they were going to go with an American, it would have been him. I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Provost I had on my list, too.
Wow.
Not up at the top. I also predicted, which is funny, because everyone's telling me this is going to be a long conclave. I said in
you
three
said,
votes,
no,
they'll pick the Cardinal. Three. And I was right on.
Well, you know why, Chris? You find out yeah. those guys, once the doors close, they don't get a lot to eat, from what I understand.
And you know, Paul, they don't even serve them raviolis
because yeah.
they're afraid that messages on paper would be put in the raviolis. Yeah. Imagine this. And if you had a group of politicians on, they would never keep the secret. Forget about it. You
oh,
know?
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, he's a wise choice when I look at it. I also believe that the Holy Spirit intervenes. And I think God, frankly, gave us this man. And you know why? When he was 4 or 5 years old in Illinois, where he lived, he wanted to be a priest.
Yeah.
There was no deviation from it. He would take the ironing board in his house, and that became his altar.
Jeez.
So he was constantly doing it. He's an Augustinian, you
yeah.
know, from St. Augustine's order. He worked in Peru for like 10 years in the missionaries. He apparently appointed, you know, recommended to the Pope the appointment of bishops, cardinals.
Yeah.
So he knows the Vatican. He understands the need to reach out to the poor, the marginalized. And I think he was the right choice. He was a balance. And I think that's why they chose him. I don't think they would have chosen him if he was an American cardinal. that didn't have the experience in Peru.
Sure.
He's an he speaks like five or six languages. He's a brilliant gentleman. Mm-hmm. Went to Villanova, as many people have said.
Yeah.
And they say what you see is what you get. He's a very common man. Mm-hmm. He's a great listener. And I think it bodes well for the church. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And the name he picked, after Leo the 13th.
Yeah.
Leo the 13th was all about equality, especially for the worker. You know, the dignity of a working person, you know, fair wages, mm-hmm. all that stuff. You know, Leo the 13th was in around the industrial age when, you know, there was abuses in the factories,
sure.
children
yeah.
working. And Leo came out and said, you know, the dignity of working people. So it was fascinating the name he chose. He could have chose Francis.
Yeah.
He could have chose Matthew because of his background with working with the poor. But he chose Leo, which is a strong statement.
Yeah. Interesting yeah. stuff. Chris, thank yeah. you. Great stuff there. Yeah. Chris Caruso every Friday at 5:15. Chris, be good. My God, now that I know that you're a tout about the Vatican, I got to check in with you.
Yeah.
More.
Hey, and I didn't bet any numbers either. I kept it to myself.
All right.
You know?
Thanks,
Take
Chris.
Careful.
Have a good weekend. How about that?